Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network Special Edition Thursday Night Thunder. I am your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me from the city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, I'm going to be very careful about this, but can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear loud and clear. It's kind of like Throwback Thursday. This is the old Leave It in the Ring slot. So, it kind of seems natural. And, you know, I got to be honest, Steve, I always like doing TNR on Monday because we can recap everything, be the first take of the week. But I also always like Leave It in the Rings Thursdays because a bunch of shit happens during the week and you get to be first to comment on it before Friday Night Fights. So here we go.
Yeah, we want to explain what happened on Monday when our show was truncated and, quite frankly, did not happen. Folks, blame Blog Talk. It was way above our heads, and we've made it up for you because, hey, you know what our motto is here at the next round? For the fans. Always for the fans. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a question or comment via Twitter, you can do so at Steve UCN Live and Gabriel _ Montoya. We're going to be here for at least 60 minutes, going all the way up to 90, a little bit shortened because, quite frankly, Johnny Football kicks off on CBS right around that time. So let's get started with round number one, HBO's championship boxing from the refurbished Thomas and Mack Center in Viva, Las Vegas. For the WBO welterweight title, Tim Bradley takes on Brandon Rios, and the co-supporting bout is WBO featherweight titleist Vasyl Lomachenko. Gabe, how much of an effect do you think one Teddy Atlas will have on the Desert Storm Tim Bradley?
Now, even when he's not calling a fight, I get stuck having to listen to Teddy ramble. That's what I expect. I expect a lot of dialogue in this. He's a very strong personality, Teddy. And it's interesting to me. It's like he went from a guy that he didn't feel was getting enough attention in Joel Diaz to Teddy Atlas, who I've always felt it's really all about Teddy, particularly in the corner. If Tim's looking to get the spotlight on him, it seems like everything that people have been talking about has been Teddy Atlas. How that all works out, I don't know. Tim says he feels as if he's never learned how to box before working with Teddy in this camp, which is really a slap in the face to Joel Diaz after all they've done and been through together. But it also makes me wonder, you know, Brandon Rios is not a guy, particularly a motivated Brandon Rios, as he looks to be in this fight, and from what I've understand from my sources, is in very good shape. That's not a guy you want to be trying to find yourself in front of. I think Tim Bradley could have some problems this weekend. I'm leaning towards Rios. We'll see at the end of this segment.
You know, this is one of the cliches of boxing. You get a new trainer, and all of a sudden, the new guy is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I agree with you. And I really feel bad for Joel Diaz, who I thought for a decade had a very successful run in helping to develop and nurture Tim Bradley. They won 5 major world titles. They made millions of dollars. He was involved in some of the biggest events in all of boxing. And the thanks that you get is that you say, I've learned more about boxing in 3 days under Teddy Atlas than a decade with Joel Diaz. I think that's a complete slap in the face. And with some of the things that Tim Bradley has been saying, it lets you know this was an acrimonious split. It wasn't all hunky-dory, and that there is some friction. And here's the other issue. I think Tim Bradley's putting some pressure on himself because this is a guy that's very accomplished. With what he is saying about one Teddy Atlas, who I respect, and I know can train, Gabe, he better look like $1 million on Saturday night. Not just win, but he better look spectacular because he has really raised the bar of expectations. But I'll say this. I think he wins the fight, But I think it becomes very difficult in the second half because I think Brandon Rios is going to be there. He's going to keep chopping wood from the very beginning. And one thing we've noticed about Tim Bradley recently post-Provodnikov, eventually the dam starts to break at least a little bit.
Even against Jesse Vargas, who's far from a puncher, as far from a puncher as you can be. And he hurt Tim late. I just wonder, you know, I mean, Tim's the smaller guy to me in this fight. He's used to carrying a lot of weight and has fought fast, hard-hitting guys. But has he dealt with a Rios lately? You know, a guy that's going to lean on him, that's going to look to get inside and do good work in there. Brandon is a good inside fighter. He's a solid technician in there. The people he's been working with, people that don't even want to be mentioned until after the fight, if it all works out, I suppose, are people I trust. And they, like way early in camp, I was hearing Brandon was motivated, hungry, really wanted it, and it wasn't all show. It wasn't all, and there was something to work with. There was a guy that was in shape and eating right and doing all the right things. I think this could be a very tough fight for Tim. I think he gets the nod because I think that's an avenue that needs to stay open for Top Rank, Tim Bradley, Manny Pacquiao 3. So I think he gets the nod, but it's a really tough fight. Maybe even, if Rios puts him down, it's going to be a body shot. You don't get up from those, so I don't think there's any knockdowns in the fight.
Gabe, moving on to the opening bout on HBO, Vasyl Lomachenko takes on this relatively unknown Mexican, Romila Kohashika. Gabe, again, doesn't Lomachenko, whose two fights this year will consist of Gamaliel Rodriguez and now this guy, doesn't he also symbolize kind of the Top Rank HBO malaise of 2015? You don't have the quantity of fights. You only had two. And the quality is also missing, much like a Terrence Crawford. Here's the issue with Lomachenko. He might be the best featherweight in the world, even with just a record of 4-1. But without that foundation of being able to develop a guy and get him out to the public early and often, five fights in, a lot of the other blue-chip featherweights are on the other side of the fence, and he's not a real massive ticket seller at all, doesn't have this gregarious personality, yet he's already stuck in a box of being the twice-a-year fighter. Gabe, I just think, again, I love the ambition. I love the fact he wanted to challenge himself and make history early, but there is a disadvantage to doing it the way he did, winning a title in, what, his third pro fight?
Yeah, I don't understand what they're trying to do. Are they just coming in and, like, raiding the sport? Like, he's only 27, they're going to make a bunch of money and then just get the hell out? Is that the plan for Lomachenko? I don't really quite understand it. I mean, I don't think anybody can afford to have a year like him and Terrence Crawford had when you're at that top level. Maybe it speaks to a waning interest in boxing from HBO's side. That budget keeps getting smaller, fewer dates. I think it was Tom Hauser, or it was you, actually, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, maybe longer, maybe 5 years ago when I was still down there, talked about that, you know, if HBO's budget, if they just decided not to have boxing, it probably wouldn't hurt them that much in the overall scheme of things. I mean, think about all the great series that they have, all the other programming they have. To lose boxing, I mean, how many of their subscribers would they lose? And to the overall package, how much damage would it do? So I don't know. You know, in any other case, you know, the guy's got so few fights. I don't begrudge him having an opponent like this. It's like they got the title. It became a shield, so then he can kind of control who gets forced on him as an opponent, and he gets all these voluntaries. It's kind of a safe place to be, considering that he's only got five fights. But, yeah, it's weird. It's very strange marketing for both guys.
Moving on here with the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network special edition of Thursday Night Thunder. Speaking of HBO Sports, kind of a shakeup at the top, and what I think is a bit of a surprise based on the timing, Ken Hirschman is going to be stepping down as the president of HBO Sports, a position he has held since early 2012. Gabe, what were your thoughts on his overall tenure?
You know, I thought he was slowly riding the ship the last few years, although, you know, kind of knowing Peter Nelson, I always kind of wondered, just I remember seeing him around. You know, at first he was Freddie's biographer around the Cotto fight. That's where I met him. And then all of a sudden he was working for HBO, and the kind of fights I know he likes and what he kind of envisions, I always felt that a lot of his influence is what we were seeing, you know, going back to, you know, I don't even know, but you know, Golovkin is a big reason, you know, Peter Nelson's a big reason that he's there. So I don't know. It's hard to judge Hirschman because he never really talked to the media. I certainly wasn't an insider with that guy. He inherited some things, and then he started to gear his ship towards, like, you know, punchers, action guys. I thought getting rid of Heyman and just saying, look, enough, we've got to, you know, have our own identity here, I thought was a good idea. But also, I don't know, a little bit aggressive too. It's hard to say. It seems like it's a kind of a truncated tenure, don't you think? It seems a little like he didn't quite finish the dream.
You know what's interesting? From the very moment he got the job, and it was always a very strange, curious pick given the fact that there's not a lot of crossover between Showtime and HBO. Someone told me he may have been the only person ever to really work for both companies. I know it caused a lot of hard feelings with Les Moonves, who then proceeded to try to rip his heart out by taking Floyd Mayweather. Now, early on, this run was not a good one. Andre Ward's career stalled, and he was his main sponsor. Showtime had a very good 2013, and they actually eclipsed HBO Boxing for the first time ever as it related to the Nielsen ratings. But like you said, Gabe, the last couple of years, I thought he had righted the ship, had a clear direction, and it's very simple. It's like a college football coach that moves on to another job, whether it's by getting another offer or just flat out by getting fired. Did he leave that program in a better place than when he walked into the job? If you ask me that about Ken Hirschman, I would say he absolutely did. And for that, I thank him. I think the HBO subscribers should be very thankful, because by the time he left, you look at who the premier fighters in boxing are and the most crowd-pleasing, the overwhelming majority are with that network. That's the truth. And getting back Golden Boy without Al Heyman, getting back a Canelo Alvarez, and bringing into the fold a Gennady Golovkin and Sergey Kovalev, which a lot of credit for that has to go to Peter Nelson. Again, I think people should, if they're going to be fair about this, look at his administrative run as the head of HBO Sports in a positive light. Other news and notes here, Gabe, I found this to be very funny and ironic that Andre Ward, there was so much made about him having a new 3-fight deal with HBO that's going to culminate in a showdown with light heavyweight champion Sergey Kovalev. But a day after he gives this really defiant interview with Lance Pugmire of the LA Times about how this is going to be a great comeback, I owe nobody an explanation for who my opponents are. Well, he has a bum knee, and he is now scratched from that November 21st Cotto Canelo pay-per-view card, which quite frankly may have gained another 75,000 viewers in light of that news. Your thoughts on the continued the continued story of one S.O.G.
Our friend Johnny Blaze told me that the tickets in the secondary market, actually the prices went up after Ward dropped out by like about $20. I thought you'd get a kick out of that. Yeah, it's funny when you Google Andre Ward, you know, L.A. Times, you get Andre Ward returning to ring, giving his side of his story. And then above that, Andre Ward withdraws from Cotto Canelo card with knee injury. It, you know, 6 hours later, you know, it just seems I don't understand what he's got against boxing fans. And I always feel like, and maybe it's because I've witnessed it happen with Virgil kind of trying to make me a messenger. And you need to tell Steve Kim that, you know, if I have a son that's boxing, I want him, but he's not going to go to a guy that's a trainer with Steve Kim's mentality. He's going to go to a guy that teaches defense and, you know, always trying to make me the messenger to you. And I just like, yeah, whatever. Okay. I always get the sense that Andre Ward is talking to you because you're like his biggest critic. And, you know, he's not talking about boxing fans. He's talking about writers that are critical of him. And you're the first one I think of. It's just funny to me. Like, yeah, as a matter of fact, he, you know, what he was saying was that he wasn't beholden to the fans. He doesn't have to answer to the fans for the people that he fights. And considering that they supposedly will buy tickets to his fights and are going to pay for the pay-per-view to see him fight, shouldn't he, who is he beholden to then if it isn't the fans? I don't know.
What's
it's just
interesting
very strange,
about Andre Ward is I was ahead of the curve by at least 3 years. And some people say that I'm a critic. I'd like to think I'm a truth teller because I've been spot on from the very beginning. And there was a large group of vocal minority that because they had him in their pound-for-pound list or they took selfies with the guy or their outlet got access to him, took offense to what I said. But if you go back to what my message has been about Andre Ward, that there's a certain dishonesty and a certain disingenuous attitude that he has, you have to say that Steve Kim nailed it. And yes, I just went third person because, quite frankly, I'm right. And I just find it, again, that the guy is a bit of a con artist, and I don't know why he gets a pass from certain members of the boxing community, but if you look at the overall totality of events and the things that he has done, how can anyone disagree with me? I mean, listen, this guy basically made a phony offer to Gennady Golovkin, knowing that they had another fight, knowing he was going to move up in weight, knowing that his knee was probably bugging him. Think about this. If Tom Loeffler would have actually placated them and negotiated the fight and held off the Lemieux offer, look how much of a waste of time that would have been. Listen, Andre Ward to me is not a very honest guy. And people say, why would you say that? And I think it's very simple. It's the track record. Now, for the record, do I believe, as some have speculated, that he dropped out of the fight because he didn't like his status as the semi-main on a major pay-per-view card and being overshadowed? And some people have said, well, maybe he didn't like the heat that he was getting. I don't believe that for 1 second. This was a really easy fight in the eyes of most people for a lot of money. Gabe, do you really think Andre Ward is going to turn down large reward for minimal risk? I just don't think that's in his DNA.
Yeah, I don't. You know, at this point, ever since Butte and turning that down, and that's actually a lost interview of mine. I just didn't want to transcribe it, so I didn't. I did an interview with Virgil Hunter where he was telling me why it made logical sense not to fight Lucien Butte because he hadn't proven what they'd proven, and blah blah blah. It was a terrible business move. Overpricing yourself in the marketplace. You know, it's great to value yourself, but if you're not fighting, and at this point, you know, he's fought, what, 3 times in 3 years? Like, you know, what do you want from us? You know, whatever it is, I'm not giving it to you. You know,
well,
speaking of not giving boxing fans what they want,
Guillermo Rigondeaux had a terrible week last week. Rigondeaux was de-recognized by the WBO, and I believe the WBA made him a champion in recess. So in other words, he was stripped bare of maybe the only things that really made him valuable, which were the championship belts. Gabe, I'll say this. Do I believe he's a victim of some malfeasance and some sanctioning body corruption and double standards? Absolutely. I'll be the first one to say that. However, in talking to people that have worked on the periphery of Rigondeaux's career with intimate knowledge of how it's been run, he's also turned down a lot of money. And if he doesn't get what he wants from the marketplace, he has to adjust. And I'm like Carlos Acevedo. Any fighter that says, I don't give a damn about the fans, it's the way I fight. Well, Gabe, do you really expect the consumers to say, well, you know what, then we're buying in? I do have some sympathy for Guillermo Rigondeaux because I think he is the victim of politics and the fact that he's not very valuable in the marketplace. But I think some of the blame, if he's going to point the finger, has to come right back to him and Caribe Promotions.
Well, there you said it. You know, I think people confuse Rigo's style in the ring with what's going on with him outside of the ring. I don't think his style is that. He has a high knockout percentage. He was just in an exciting fight. He's had the first big one, he has never been able to live it down for whatever reason. It's where, like, Ernie started calling him Rigondull, and it was a cute nickname, and so it stuck. But really, if you look at all his fights, they're actually not that boring. Donaire was the common boring denominator in their fights. He's the guy that checked out of that fight. But what's going on outside of the ring, I think, is so interesting. And who the hell is Caribe Promotions? And why can't a legion of boxing writers tell me that? Why can't I Google it and find out that these guys, maybe they're a front? Somebody a long time ago that really is in the know with him had mentioned, not with him specifically, but that the idea that anybody who comes over from Cuba was selling their career, like a large portion of it, to the pirates that bring them over. These guys don't get over here by accident, and there's not many. It's not like that's a growing industry. There's probably a few guys that do it. So whoever Caribe Promotions is, to me, is the story, because they're clearly the problem. Gary Hyde pretty much said as much. He seemed kind of scared to actually say their name. Maybe he was just avoiding a lawsuit. But what's up with them? What is their deal, and how big of a cut do they get? Does Rigo pass on these things because it's actually not enough money, considering what he has to pay Caribe? Like, I want to know more of that story. But
you know, everyone, Gabe, everyone demonized Bob Arum. And again, he's not faultless. When you trash your own client because he wasn't supposed to beat Donaire, Bob has to take some blame for that. With that said, he still had a contract where he was paying him high six figures and gave him at least two fights a year. And Caribe Promotions said, we can't wait to leave Bob Arum and this plantation and free at last, and we're going to do shows in Miami, Florida, and we're going to show that he's a draw. Gabe, they haven't done one show.
Who are they? Yeah, that's what I want to know. Maybe
I mean, they're like this apparition, and all they are a name on a banner. And again, do I think it's a front? Do I think it's a shell company? You know, I don't know, but I know one thing. They're not someone I would sign with. And a lot of these naive bloggers and writers say, oh, well, you know, Bob Arum really screwed up. They need to go to Miami because there's so many Cubans.
Oh,
well, let me tell you something, Gabe. When I was at Miami about a month and a half ago for the Miami-Nebraska game, I spent time with somebody in the sport of boxing that has promoted Cubans, who's of Cuban descent, who lives in the 305. And they said, Steve, there is no boxing business centered around Cubans here. It's a misnomer, and I have thousands of dollars worth of losses to prove it, because it is cultural. The older generation Cubans, they don't have a lot of love lost for the newer ones that come over. And it's a fascinating dynamic that exists in the Cuban community. And you talk to any Cuban about it, they will absolutely admit that it exists. There's a certain prejudice, and there's a certain cultural divide. Again, well, I've been told by very good sources that I trust, Guillermo Rigondo has been given offers. He's been offered fights. Now, is he getting the money that he wants? Gabe, no fighter ever gets the money that they want. But they eventually settle in on a number that they have to. If, in other words, don't fight. And I just think the Rigondo situation is that he's a victim, but at the same time, I believe he's also a perpetrator. If you want to call in, that number is 347-215-7598. And we'll go to the Twitter timeline if you have a question or comment on this medium. At Steve UCN Live, at Gabriel underscore Montoy. And it's only appropriate that we start with our Ricky Henderson from the White House, the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. Why does Bradley constantly put Diaz down? Bradley didn't strike me as that kind of guy. Seemed like he was old school. Gabe, here's my opinion. I think once Diaz was very open and clear that this was about Bradley's wife, I think Bradley may have been under some pressure to stick up for his lady.
I think you're dead on the money. Don't bring up wives. Even if you made your wife your manager, don't bring up wives. It just gets ugly.
And here's one from Jimmy Blanche. Never mind mythical pound for pound number one. Andre Ward has become an actual mythical fighter because he never fights. And that's another issue, Gabe. How do you wear out a knee when you're so inactive all the time?
Well, didn't he have an injured knee that he had surgery on? I want to say prior to the Super Six or just after. I thought he'd had a knee issue in the past. So that might be what this is. I mean, he didn't look physically like tip-top, like he'd been sitting in the garage, you know, getting the tune-up for 2 years. He didn't look good to me in that last fight. So, I mean, maybe he tweaked it there or tweaked it in training. I mean, you know, fighters are always getting dinged up. So it's not surprising. It's kind of crazy that it's a little late in the game and after the LA Times story came out.
Gabe, I am writing a story for UCN Live where I talk about the plight of Rigondeau and Ward, who in many respects are two of the best stylist technicians in the sport, but have really had star-crossed careers based on their abilities. I'm going to bring this point up. It's one thing to fight Alexander Brand as a undercard fighter on a pay-per-view. It is what it is. It's been done a million times. It'll be done forever in boxing. However, if he is now shifted to an HBO date in 2016, which I believe is the most likely scenario, and he gets a large license fee from the network, I don't think Alexander Brand will be green-lighted by the network. That's another reason why I believe there is an actual injury, because if you have a chance to fight a guy who's like a 30-1 underdog and you're making a couple million, Gabe, you're not acting like Fred Sanford with the fake heart attack. You go on, you fight that fight, you take the heat, and you cash that check. Here's one from Joshua Deli, MVP, at Studhart22. What time is Ruslan's fight airing on Showtime, and which network is more likely for his next fight? Gabe, I was told that Ruslan's fight this week in Monaco will be airing on Showtime on some sort of tape delay basis, but as of now, I do not know what day or which Showtime platform will be used. There has been no official announcement from them. But here's the sense that I get. If Showtime is buying this fight, they're not just doing it. I think they also want some future interest in Ruslan Provodnikov.
Yeah, I mean, it's a stock that's going quickly, you know. I mean, it's going to drop fast because he's got that brawling style. I mean, 3-4 fights, you know, if they're all like Ruslan Provodnikov fights, maybe you try to build something with him, give him some soft touches. Let me ask you this. Who do you think has had a better tenure, Hirschman or Espinoza?
I would say on the totality, I think that Espinoza jumped off, came out of the starting blocks like Usain Bolt. But I do think in the last 18 to 24 months, I do think it was Hirschman with the Edwin Moses finishing kick. I would say Ken Hirschman.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, it's to me, Hirschman kind of preserved, like kind of brought back the HBO's brand and brought back their image and their identity. And it's kind of a flagship where guys want to be in boxing. And the product is generally good. There's been some you know, kind of gross mismatches as of late. But to me, Showtime has lost their identity. I don't know what it is anymore.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Again, we're going to be here for at least 60 minutes, all the way up to 90, before football takes over my life. Gabe, let's go to the phone lines.
And mine. Let the fantasy game begin. 619, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, this is Juan from San Diego.
Juan, hey, welcome aboard.
How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
Yeah, I called in Monday, but I don't know what happened there. Nobody was there.
Again, blame Blog Talk.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't actually catch the beginning of the show, the first 5-10 minutes, so I didn't know what happened. But, well, the reason I'm calling, I was out for a couple of weeks. I was on my anniversary trip. So I went to Japan, and I was trying to look for some boxing over there. I couldn't find anything. But right now I'm listening to all the Ward and Rigondeaux or Rigondeaux or whatever, however you pronounce the name. All the things that are happening with those guys, and really just I was thinking while you were talking about them, who really cares about them? Like, they don't have a fan base. Like, I don't know why it's such a big topic when – there's guys like just I was like with a couple of buddies at work. We were just like trying to survey the office and see how many people knew who Triple G was. And, you know, Triple G is a guy that has a pleasing style. And, you know, he now has that Apple Watch commercial, and the guy is on pay-per-view. And it was surprising that nobody knew him. Like, and that's a guy that has a pleasing style. So how the hell are they going to know Rigondeaux and Ward, who – one of them doesn't even speak English, and the other guy just simply isn't active. So, to me, it's like those topics are like for the footnotes on a Gennady Golovkin article or something like that, because I don't see why I bother with them, you know? And the second thing is the fight, the Bradley Reels fight. For some reason, man, I thought the fight was here at the Forum. And I was just thinking, maybe I'll go to the fight, but now I was looking at the Twitter timeline right now and saw that the fight is actually in Vegas. And I was like, Oh, now I remember. What the hell is it doing over there? And I remember about that. So that kind of like, I don't know why, what the hell is doing over there. Whoever's promoting this fight doesn't know the hell what they're doing. And what do you guys think of
that? Let me just say this. I've been very clear. I thought this fight belonged at the Forum. And maybe there were some concerns with weather. It is a little bit colder now in Southern California that StubHub may have not been all that realistic, and there's always scheduling issues with these venues. But let me tell you something. Top Rank is going through a tough time selling tickets. I believe there's been no more than 6,000 tickets sold or out of the box office for this event. And my understanding is that they've closed off the upper levels. So, again, I think it's a very good fight. I think it'd be entertaining. But I've said this for at least 5 years. You could do the major, major Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather shows in Las Vegas, and you could do the shows at, like, the theater or, like, a little ballroom, like the Cosmopolitan. But those mid-level fights like Rios Bradley, they really do struggle in Las Vegas.
Yeah, and another thing, Steve, I think you were saying that on your timeline today on Twitter that – most of the small shows don't actually profit and don't sell tickets. And I still don't think as Vegas is a fight town, even though the biggest fights are there.
I think the
newer market, like, yeah, I think that like last week, Terrence Crawford fighting in his hometown. Those kind of fights are like the local guy fighting a rival. I think that's what the promoters should encourage a little bit more. And finally, I want to make my prediction on this fight. And ever since I heard that this fight was being made, I wanted to make my prediction. I've called several times, and I always forget about it. But I just want to say I'm going for Rios on this fight. For some reason, I think Bradley might have slipped a little bit. Like the final round against Vargas, getting hit by that guy and almost getting knocked out. Well, not knocked out, but, you know, getting hurt that bad. I don't think he would survive a Rios, and I think Rios is going to come in motivated and is going to try to make it a war, and I don't think Bradley's going to survive this one. I think this guy is going to beat him up. That's my prediction, guys.
Like Glenn Johnson, Roy Jones kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Keeps throwing punches, and Bradley just never quite gets into rhythm. It's possible. I mean, Brandon's a big guy, man, and he loves to fight. I think there's something left in the tank with him. At least one more fight, and this might be it.
Gabe, going to the point that we talked about before, the other misnomer about Vegas being a fight city, I think it's a big event city when it's a big fight. But I remember Bob Arum telling me years ago, you got to understand, the actual people in the city don't buy tickets. So in other words, unless it's one of those events where people are flying in or driving in from other parts of the country, again, you're not going to get 10 to 12,000 for most fights that do not involve A, Floyd Mayweather, B, Manny Pacquiao, or C, some sort of combination of Miguel Cotto and Saul Alvarez, which I believe, going back to Golovkin, is one of the reasons why Tom Loeffler has stayed away from the Vegas casino scene for the time being.
And what thing that, Kim, go ahead.
It hasn't made sense to me for a while. I mean, you look at these guys, they don't seem to me to have, like, fan bases that have been proven to travel, much less to Vegas. At this time of year, the holidays are coming up, and maybe you just blown a bunch of money partying on Halloween. It's just not. You're not going to do it.
Yeah.
One more thing because I'm about to cross the border to Tijuana right now, so I wanna mention
good
one
luck
more
with
thing
that.
Before I go. Yeah. What?
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, it is my family, but I wanted to say something for what you said right now, Steve. Before I let you go, I remember some years back when Hopkins fought Bro Jones on the rematch. I was with some friends over there in Vegas, just, you know. Yeah,
I was there.
And my friend said, hey, there's a boxing fight. We should go. Like, it was a Cirque du Soleil or one of those shows, like an amusement thing to do. And I was like, this is not a good fight. Yeah, but I want to go to a fight in Vegas. And we ended up buying those tickets. And I think that's what boxing is right now in Vegas. Just another attraction there. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. 347-215-7598, Gabe.
787, you're live on the next round.
Hi, guys. Hey, it's Javier.
What's up?
Hey, no introduction needed here. Come on.
Guys, first of all, let me comment that I was waking up this morning with people crying about Underwar not fighting. Because everybody's going to the fight because Underwar is fighting.
Yeah, right.
The first thing I wanted to guys you to know to talk about is there is some talk here in Puerto Rico about they are doing a Verdejo Donaire and Verdejo on the same card. But and I know a lot of injury, but don't you guys think that Verdejo has lost a lot of momentum because of the injury?
Yes, I mean, first of all, that date is proposed to be December 11th. Now, Donaire's fight for Rigondeaux's belt, which was stolen from the poor little Cuban, that's set. I talked to some people at Top Rank. As it relates to Verdejo, that is not for sure. I think it's a 50-50 thing. They will not rush Felix Verdejo back. They're going to think about the long-term picture here. But, Javier, to answer your question, I still remember talking to some people involved in that career. The plan was to have about six fights, and they've had at least two or three postponed. He had an injury situation that kept him out of the ring. And would I say this was a banner year for Felix Verdejo? No. Quite frankly, his health was really a big hurdle.
To be quite honest, I was told at the beginning of the year they were going to do some fights. They were going to do Nahara in June, and if they keep winning, they were thinking about doing Verdejo on the parade next year. That's not happening.
Yeah, I think, listen, when it's all said and done, a year like this can be overcome if this kid's the goods and he stays healthy. It could just be a blip in the radar. But we've seen in the past a lot of great fighters who can really punch and strike hard. If they don't have good hands, it can become problematic. And, listen, I love it when Verdejo fights, and it was really disappointing that last Saturday night, which ended up being a pretty entertaining card featuring guys like Christopher Diaz, it just wasn't as much fun without Felix Verdejo because, to me, he has become must-see television in a lot of ways.
That's another kid that he has become very entertaining. And when he first started, he was like the psychic to Verdejo, but now he is pretty good. He can be a decent prospect, the Christopher Diaz kid.
Yes, he's got a chance. Javier, my question is this. How much excitement is on the island for Cotto Canelo? Because I got to tell you, we're 3 weeks away from November 21st, and more than one person has commented to me a decided lack of buzz over that fight.
Well, to be quite honest with you, people know that the fight is happening, but Cotto will never be accepted like Verdejo or Trinidad. Having said that, I believe that if Cotto wins, and I'm reading an article for a newspaper here in Puerto Rico about that, I believe if Cotto wins, he finally gets his big Mexican, and that's important in Puerto Rico. Gomez has Zarate, Trinidad has De La Hoya, and even though Cotto beat Margarito the second time around, that fight took a different meaning when the hand wreck was discovered. So I don't think people are going to watch Puerto Rico. Boxing is a religion, and everybody's watching the fight. Don't get fooled by that, even though there is not the boss that they used to be on the Trinidad, Verdejo, or even on the Cotto fights earlier in his career. But I believe if he wins, I think he's a lot of very regarded. But if he wins, I believe people will find out saying, you know what, he might talk in third person. He might not smile that much. But he beat a guy 10 years younger that was a Mexican at his peak, because Canelo is at his peak. So I believe he will get the respect if he wins. But you're right, there is not the buzz that has been in other places. And here in Puerto Rico, they have to put that like Canelo, because there has been a large group of people in Puerto Rico that never connected with Canelo.
Right. Okay, anything else, Javier?
One one last thing, guys. How much do you think Kovalev gets affected? Because if Andre Ward does not fight, let's say, until March or April of next year because of this knee injury, doesn't the contract say when does the Kovalev Ward fight have to take place?
Well, Javier, before we went on the air, I actually called Kathy Duva to get some of her thoughts on this situation, and trust me, she's a little bit crestfallen by this thing and the way it's played out. She's made it clear they're fighting January 30th against Jean Pascal, and in 2016, whether Andre Ward is available or not, they will have three fights, and she just hopes for the best. Again, when you get into a contract with Andre Ward, you hope it's fulfilled. Just ask the late, great Dan Goosen.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Javier, as always, thank you for the call. Enjoy your weekend. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, special edition of Thursday Night Thunder on the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya.
And in the 323, you're live on the next round. Fight on.
Fight on, gentlemen.
Fight on. Long live Clay Helton.
Yes, yes. We're going to be all right. It's homecoming weekend, Steve. You should make it out. There'll be boos and blondes all over the place with Ceviche and Zima.
Ooh, hey. That's a good offer.
Wow.
How you guys doing today?
Now,
well,
Fed, we're just going to clear the floor. We're just going to clear the lane. You want to speak upon your Oakland compatriot, Andre Ward. Just go. The microphone is yours.
Steve, I think my brother 787 on YouTube said it best. Just shut the hell up, Andre Ward, and go somewhere. That was an excellent YouTube video. I want to nominate that for an Oscar in short films because he just spoke such gospel this morning, and I was cracking up in the office, and my producer's like, what the hell's so funny? I'm like, oh, it's just some boxing stuff. And he's like, oh, I wish one of our scripts was that funny. And it's just, it's comedy to people that actually know Ward and know what's going on and know his track record, like you said, Steve. I mean, if I'm Kovalev, I'm mad at Kathy Duva. I could have already had a fight in Russia. You postponed my fight in Russia thinking that this guy's going to fight me when Ken Hirschman signed his buddy to the deal and Ward knew he was hurt. You can't, Virgil Hunter says, well, he had been trying to get the swelling down for a while now. So which one is it? He looked good in training or he was trying to get the swelling down? I mean, yeah. Come on. Which one is it, Virgil? You know, you've had all this time, though. You've had since June to find an opponent. You give this facetious offer to Triple G, and thankfully Tom Loeffler is an astute businessman. He just laughed it off. And this is the eggs. This is the chicken coming home to roost with Andre Ward's career. That's all it is.
I don't think he's
irrelevant.
Not to get all cosmic, but I think that it happened 2 days after and they had to pull the plug. 2 days after, it's pretty negative stuff in that paper.
Exactly.
You know? I've said it before on this show. I feel like they kind of come from a negative, dark place. Dark not in color, but in just always kind of looking at what people, like you said, I always feel like I'm trying to prove myself, or it's very defensive. I mean, maybe that's why his style is the way it is.
I mean, he's just not positive.
What's that?
I mean, and that article, Gabe, he's like, I don't owe the fans. Like he was saying, I don't owe the fans no explanation of my opponents and blah, blah, blah. And that YouTube video guy said, we're the fans. We're paying your salary. Of course, we're not going to, you know, and like I always tell these Ward fans, all five of them, I'm not going to spend my disposable income on something I don't find entertaining. And because more fans in boxing choose to agree that Ward's not entertaining, he has no value. And
I just
Virgil Hunter have that idea that they do have value.
Yeah, I don't understand the need to lash out at fans. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Seems counterintuitive.
Guys, let me just use this analogy that I used with the three knockdown rule with Mario Lopez. If you were an eatery, some sort of restaurant, or an establishment that served food, and you serve food that didn't satisfy the palate of your consumers, and you flat out said, we don't care if you like it or not. This is the way we're going to cook it. Trust me, the Yelp reviews would not be kind, and you'd probably be closing up for business very soon. In many ways, the customer is always right. Sometimes it's not fair, but that's the way it is. And On Reward, to me, unlike Rigondeaux, has been almost overpaid. He's been overcompensated for what he actually brings to the table. And again, this is not about actual accomplishments, because this is different. This is show business. And Andre Ward has always had, I believe, a delusional sense of himself and reality.
You're right, Steven. I honestly thought he was going to get the De La Hoya effect after winning the gold, but that didn't happen, brother. You didn't have the following, and now it's – remember those tweets he put out, Steve, a while ago during the, his own his hiatus that he self-imposed about, if I never fight another day, I'm fine, or I was this close to retiring. It's obvious his heart's not in the fight game no more. He just wants to get paid. No knock on him. You're a fighter. You're supposed to want to get paid. But you don't want it as bad as Triple G wants it, as bad as Kovalev wants it. And your actions are dictating for the fans to come to that conclusion. You should have just retired if you had that in your mind. You're like, you're making this go in circles. HBO signed you to a deal. You knew you were hurt. That's not honorable, man. That's not the son of God. Come on, man.
Dan Gilson wouldn't disagree, Gabe.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it. That YouTube video is great. Enough of Andre Ward bashing. I changed my what I wanted to talk about, Steve. You brought up that point. I really don't see no buzz for this fight. I wouldn't be surprised if this pay-per-view does below their doesn't go over their expectations. You know, Oscar saying 1.5 and all that. I don't think it's going to do this box office smash that they think it's going to do.
I believe, and I'm not the only one who thinks this, May 2nd and what went down with that pugilistic Ponzi scheme, I think is having deep and everlasting effects on the rest of the business.
I wrote about it before the PBC even had a fight or had their first episodes with the fight was on, talking about that fight actually might be the fight to kill boxing promotion as we know it, particularly the pay-per-view model. It's a giant cash grab. They waited till the thing was completely dead as a sporting event, but had become a cultural phenomenon, Fight Pacquiao, people chanting it at him, and then it all happened, and they made a ton of money. And really, considering if you look at that Al is trying to do something different and new with the PBC, then of course he would also have no compunction about killing the pay-per-view model, but taking as much money out of it as he can before he leaves. That to me looks like what it is. If you look at the PBC, I don't see pay-per-views on their horizon. One person I talked to said that they're not going, and I'm not the biggest MMA expert, but they said they're not going the UFC model. They're going more the Bellator model, in that if a fight builds itself
towards
what they said,
Gabe,
was just in this sense.
They got a $500 million nut, and they're not even going, and if they're going to go with an MMA model, you don't go with the most successful, biggest brand. That sounds like
just
a complete... complete hogwash to me. That seems like a lot of rationalization of absolute abject failure by the PBC. I'll be honest with you.
Well, I'm just saying in this sense that they're not following the UFC. I think in other ways they are, in terms of marketing and streamlining, being a league while operating not as a league or operating as a league while saying you're not. Those ways, yes. But he was saying in the terms of pay-per-view in that he'll let fights actually, if they do build to that kind of level, then they'll do a pay-per-view. But the whole thing isn't geared towards building up towards a pay-per-view.
Guys, let me tell you something. When you can't build stars and you don't have really compelling fighters, yeah, PBC doesn't have to worry about the PBC being pay-per-view ever.
Hey,
bottom line.
So if this Cotto Canelo fight doesn't smash expectations like, you know, they're pontificating, can you see HBO pressuring Oscar and to a sense Golden Boy to make that Canelo fight happen?
No, you know, listen, here's what I think. I think if the fight's competitive enough, I think Golovkin will be the WBC champion without fighting Cotto or Canelo, who I believe will be doing a rematch. That's just speculating on my part.
I agree there. There'll be a rematch, definitely.
Sanch, listen, good luck this weekend with your game. Fight on.
Fight on.
Moving on to some news and notes here, and we'll have fight preview and fight review coming up after that. Again, we're here to at least 8 o'clock Eastern time and 8:30, depending on your participation. Gabe, it's going to happen. One of my favorite fights that I've talked about for seemingly 3-4 years, and I've called this the UK version of Barrera Morales or Vasquez Marquez, signed, sealed, and delivered February 27th, Manchester, England. Scott Quigg versus Carl Frampton.
How good is this fight going to be, man? I can't wait. I just think what's nice is they're both 28. That's usually when a fight like this should happen. These guys are in their physical prime. They're in the gateway towards, you know, greatness. You know, looking at it, I heard an interview with Dougie the other day, and he was saying that he was the only guy in the media picking Quigg and championing Quigg. He must not listen to the show that he originated. We've both been leaning that way. I'm sticking with it. I think, you know, he's 5'8", Jekyll is 5'5". I think he's got the reach on him. I just like the way he looks. You know, I think he's an all-around, more technically sound fighter. But the Jackal's got real power. It's got a serious engine on him and ring experience. It's going to be a hell of a fight. This is like fight of the year on paper.
And my prediction is it's just chapter one. Also, a fight that will happen, it looks like January of 2016, maybe at the debut of Fox, or the PBC on Fox, that is, Sean Porter versus Keith Thurman. I'll say one thing about the Porters. They want fights, and you know what? They got one here.
This is going to be... it's a tough matchup for him. But at the same time, you know, because he's the smaller guy, Sean is, but he's bull strong, you know, and he's flawed, but like so is Thurman. And so it's going to be interesting to see how the two styles mesh. Thurman can fade a little bit late. He can be had a little bit. He's not a defensive genius. He uses his feet more than anything, and he parries sometimes, but he can be hit. So this could be a fun matchup. Do you think it has any stinker potential?
Yes, because as much as I like Sean Porter and his father, his nickname should be 3 yards in a cloud of dust, because that's how they win. And a lot of their fights, they muck and they grind, they hold and they clutch and they bull and they crowd, and it's effective, but it's not necessarily aesthetically pleasing. That's the reality of Showtime Porter. Gabe, December 12th, San Antonio. It looks like this will be on NBC, on PBC. Your main event is Omar Figueroa against Antonio DeMarco. I think Antonio DeMarco is like that scene in Godfather. Every time I try to retire, they pull me back in.
Yeah, it makes me think of that band, the Crash Test Dummies. I mean, dude, the guy... You know, I just don't understand it. I mean, he looks – when a guy is mentioned on a fight card and everybody on my Twitter timeline is like, dude's shot. He's shot. Like, you know, I don't know how many times I read that. He's probably shot. Like, why is he still – I mean, I guess maybe you could – you know, it'll be an action fight. But don't tell me that Al's better for the sport if you got guys fighting that are questionable. You know, he's just like everybody else.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, Gabe.
Four more, and let's see, 530. You're live on the next round.
Hey, this is Rich from NorCal.
Rich.
Hey, what's up, man?
Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, fellas. I wanted to make a couple points and just to get you guys' opinion on this. Carlos Acevedo, the cruelest sport, those articles that he puts on UCN Live are just, man, he's got to be right up there. Yeah, he's right up there with you and Dougie and Thomas Hauser and Gabe. Man, you guys each have your strengths, but that guy is just awesome. And he made a point in there about HBO and why it's so difficult, I think, for a lot of people to make the distinction between PBC and HBO, is that HBO has been delivering a lot of threat. And as much as I don't want to say it because I like that side of the street, I have to agree with him a little bit. And to me, that's kind of Hirschman's legacy a little bit, is that he allowed, you know, Delorme on there and Cherry to fight Crawford and Mohamed, even though it was a mandatory, and we all get that, you know, and sometimes it's the necessary evil. But I wanted to know what your thoughts were on that and how much you think that affects Hirschman's legacy.
Well, I think Ken, again, he had to deal with the invasion of the PBC, which it was going to make things very difficult. But I do think overall, even with that, I think he has HBO positioned pretty well leading into the future. And I don't know if that's going to be led by Mark Tappan or Peter Nelson, but I think that's been the biggest effect of the PBC. It's not that they've made the best fights or the most fights that really we want to see, but that they've taken away potential matchups and they have added to the division within the sport, Gabe.
Yeah, I think it's – I wonder, you know, people are saying, well, why is Hirschman leaving at this point? You know, it seems a little early. And you kind of look at the sport and I think you do have to ask yourself as a leader of you know, HBO, do I want to fight this fight and have to kind of pick and choose and get the scraps that is being left by the PBC, who's talking about going to the UK. Now, I thought they had Carl the Jackal. I'm wondering, is this going to be a UK PBC event with Quigg, who I've heard whispers is being talked to try to sign with Al? You know, I mean, if you're the HBO head, I mean, I don't know. I think Hirschman did a lot in a very hostile territory. I thought he righted the ship and a lot of damage done by Kerry Davis I thought he fixed. So, I don't know.
You know, the thing about it, and you know, this to me was like adding the insult to injury with it, because, you know, I didn't really start thinking about this until I read that the Cruel Sport article, was Hirschman's, you know, the last thing he does is sign Ward to a 3-fight deal, and then Ward pulls out of the fight, and now, you know, now that deal that Hirschman made right before he walked out, not looking so great.
Yeah, it's like Clinton overturning Glass-Steagall, like right as he's leaving his presidency.
Exactly. This is the thing is, you know, since this is going to be his thing, if that Ward Kovalev fight does eventually happen, well then, you know, Hirschman's going to look like roses coming out of this. But if that fight never happens, that changes Hirschman's legacy, I think. I don't think he comes out smelling quite so good.
That's fair.
Let's see how the next 12 months plays out. Anything else, Rich?
Yeah, absolutely. You talked about Peter Nelson and him possibly being one of the guys that's in the running to take over for Hirschman. I don't remember where I read it. Apparently there was an issue between Peter Nelson and one of the matchmakers at Top Rank. I don't know if it was Todd DeBoeuf or someone else.
Yeah, I actually did a story on it. What it is Bob Arum wanted some easier fights for his guys on HBO. Peter Nelson objected, which, by the way, that's his job. His job, in fact, is a firewall to keep up the standards of their broadcasting and to essentially be a clearance. Because that was lost with Kerry Davis and Al Haymon, and you saw what happened to that franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Arum is not a fan of Peter Nelson. He isn't. That's what I've been told, and I think I know that firsthand. But you know what? I want a guy in that position who knows how to say no and will stick up for guys like you, me, and Gabe, who are theoretically HBO's constituency. That's his job.
If Bob Arum doesn't like him, he's got my vote. He already had it.
Whoa, Gabe.
And nothing against Bob. It's just, you know, I've tangled with Bob, and I think it's a good thing to be kind of have an acrimonious relationship with him, because he's an encroacher. He's going to take everything that he can off the table for himself. And, you know, Peter probably doesn't let him get away with that. That's a good thing. That's the guy you want running HBO.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would love that guy, because that guy's always asking for the action-packed fights, man. I love that, man. Mm-hmm.
The one thing I respect about Peter, a guy that I know very well, he might make mistakes, but they're going to be honest mistakes that where he's trying to do the best he can. It's not an agenda. It's not a hookup. It's not a relationship. It's not anything untoward. He's like us. He wants to see good fights. Rich, we got to get going. Thank you for the call.
Thanks, guys.
Gabe, let's get to the fight review real fast before we move on here. If you want to call in, we still have some time. 347-215-7598. As for the Twitter, if you want to hit us up there, @SteveUCNLive, @Gabriel _Montoya. Gabe, I peeked into this card, and it kind of was like getting a box of raisins for trick-or-treat, but the PBC on NBC Sports Network, Jermell Charlo with the six-round stoppage of Rokim Alcin, and then Tony Harrison with the 10-round decision over Cecil McCullough. Gabe, do you have anything to add to this show?
I don't know who that was as Joachim Alcin, but it was a very convincing costume. It was boring as hell. There was a little bit of drama late in the Thompson-Scott fight, but, I mean, where do you go with Scott? Oh, you have him fight Wilder again, and maybe they'll agree to go two rounds, allegedly. I got nothing. It was terrible. I had to watch it. It was hard work. I was excited by that Russian card, though.
Yeah, speaking of which, a lot of things going on. Alexander Povetkin, he stops Marius Wack, and then Denis Lebedev stops Latif Coyote in 8, and then I'm happy for this. I like the guy, one of the true characters of the sport. Crown Ola Afolabi stopping Rakim Chakayev. War Ola Afolabi, Gabe.
After his last fight, he was talking retirement pretty openly on Facebook. Like, I don't have it for this game anymore. I'm done. He's pretty always very high. He's always very like just up and smiling and like, hey, how you doing? And to hear him like that and see him like that, it was heartbreaking. Man, this was a man's fight, and it was just a veteran's fight. The fire that he went through in the first 2-3 rounds, and really he was establishing his jab, and I never felt that Ola was out of control in the fight. He was getting wailed on for a minute there, but the way he finished it off, it was just such a professional assassination.
I just think, again, Ola is one of these guys. I've seen him spar light heavyweights going all the way up to Klitschko. He is absolutely
wow.
Fearless. Moving on here, 347-215-7598. Gabe, do we have any other calls?
We got three more. Let's see what they have to say. And the 517, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, how you guys doing today?
Good. What's up?
Doing well.
I just like to say I'm a big fan, Steve. I've been following you on Twitter for some time now, and I agree with some things that you say and some things I don't. But I basically want to talk about that Bradley and Rios fight that's coming up. And everybody talk about him leaving Joel Diaz, which I do think is a big disloyalty thing there going on. I think his wife does have something to do with it. And if you're in a marriage, everybody knows that you got to protect your wife. I just say Teddy Atlas is not really going to change him too much, because we all know once Bradley gets hit or feels like he's been embarrassed in the ring, he goes to that other level that the fighter has hit him with. So if he wants to fight, he's going to fight regardless of the fact of who his trainer is. I mean, what you guys think about that?
When it's all said and done, Gabe, no matter who you face or who you are against Brandon Rios, isn't the game plan always going to be you got to box Bam Bam? What more could be added by any other trainer in this particular situation?
Yeah,
I don't think anything
can
be added.
Well, I mean, everybody does something wrong. And like maybe you do a little bow and arrow when you're throwing one punch, you know, you're pulling your glove away from your face, or, you know, maybe it's a combination that you never really thought of. And all of a sudden you're able to do something just a little bit different. I mean, everybody's got their different systems. So I think there's always something to be learned, but you're not going to change your whole identity. And I agree with you, Steve. I mean, it's one of the oldest axioms. You box a puncher, you punch a boxer. And we've seen, you know, Bradley is able to just go into pure boxing mode, stick and move, and play to his strengths. Can he do that for the entire fight? I think that's the big question. And can Brandon cut off the ring? Is the conditioning work that he's been doing, like band work, resistance training, is that going to make up, for the explosiveness in the ring? He doesn't have the fastest of feet in the world, but just getting a little bit extra, maybe that'll help. So we'll see.
Right, and I also would like to say that people are saying that he got hurt by Jesse Vargas, but I will say this. When he fought Ruslan, he took some hell of a shots. Excuse my French, but he took some hell of a shots in that fight and ended up still pulling it out. And every time I watch Bradley, he takes punches and he dishes out what he gets. So, I mean, to me, I think it's going to be a good fight. I think he can withstand more punches than what people think he can. And his biggest thing will not to go into that fight brawl mode and to stay on his toes, pivot, box, get in and get out. That would be his best bet to win. So I'll pick Bradley in this fight over Rios just for that simple fact. I don't think he's done. I think he still has a lot in the tank left.
Okay, we shall find out on Saturday. Thank you for the call. Gabe, my opinion is this. Bradley can still do a lot of things. The question is, can he sustain it for 36 minutes? And again, Brandon Rios is not what I'd call a devastating one-punch puncher, but I'm telling you, he just keeps chipping away at you with those heavy hands.
Yeah, no, and the body punching. I mean, I think he's also a guy that understands that he needs to be patient sometimes, like the Acosta fight. He would go through a little bit of hell and just has belief that once he gets there, you know, he can do some serious damage. He got a little lost there in his career, and I think he wants to finish strong. He's a guy with a lot of pride, and so I feel like – I know Bradley's probably prepared for him, but, again, it's just switching trainers before Brandon Rios, that's just not the greatest idea. But it has to be deep, considering how Joel Diaz is talking and how Tim Bradley are talking. It has to be almost something else that they haven't mentioned, you know, that has been eating at them.
347-215-7598. We're into the bonus segment of the next round. Gabe, who else is on the line here?
We got two more. Let's hit the 323. You're live on the next round. 323.
Hello, guys. This is Dave from Los Angeles.
What's up, man?
I was just calling. Hello. Yeah, I was just calling to see, is there any way that you see the WBC ordering another first bid for the Stevenson Kovalev mandatory fight, or how's that going to roll? Or is that even
They can order it, but Kathy Duva's made it clear they're not doing it. So they can order whatever they want.
But I thought she said she had, like, investors, like, that could roll out big money now.
Well, I don't, you know, who knows what's going on there, but let me just say something. The business changes. What was 6 months ago may no longer be. And if you look at what's going on with the PBC, a lot of their better fights, if you want to call it that, are ending up on platforms that give license fees, namely Showtime. I've been told that the PBC has really hemorrhaged a lot of money. They need to find ways to stop this hemorrhaging. One of the ways is get on networks that will pay for fights.
That's going to be tough on HBO. I wonder if that embargo is going to carry over into the next regime. That's just an interesting question.
Anything else we can do for you?
And my other question was, how do you see the next, leader of HBO? Do you think he's going to keep supporting, you know, the Kovalev, the Triple G, you know, the Eastern Europeans, you could say?
I don't think there's any reason why he wouldn't. It's worked for him thus far, hasn't it, Gabe?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to change.
All right, thank you for the call. Gabe, who's next?
Thank you.
All right, 714, you're the last caller before football. You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
Question. In regards to if Floyd Mayweather were to come back on May 2nd on this new arena that the MGM is planning to open up. Do you guys think that, you know, he might try to run his own pay-per-view channel type of thing instead of going with, like, Showtime or HBO just to pocket more money? I heard it through a couple of people that, you know, that might be the next move. Where, you know, if he does rematch Pacquiao, as you have mentioned, Steve, that it could draw 2.2, you know, half of that, right? And if there's no network involved, wouldn't all, most of that profitability go to promoters and fighters?
Yeah, but I just wonder how realistic it is. I mean, that's a lot of work to essentially be your own network and be your own distributor. I don't know. I think it's far-fetched, I'll be honest. It's not like doing a small internet pay-per-view. We're talking about a whole different league. It's a whole different ballgame at this level.
Didn't they have a lot of screw-ups initially with even just this joint pay-per-view the last time? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that seems – I mean, the money's in distribution. That's where you want to be, you know. You want to be able to actually supply and, you know, and distribute. But I don't know. I haven't seen any inroads. Maybe Al's got something – one more thing up his sleeve.
Got it. One last thing. In regards – and you guys talked about it earlier, the buzz for the Canelo and Cotto fight. It's not all there. How do you guys think ticket sales are going? You know, you think that they'll be still available to,
yes,
you know, the date of come fight night, or
they had overpriced the tickets, and from what I'm hearing from my sources that really understand the secondary market and understand the ticket business, because that's how they eat. Tickets are now being released back to the box office, and I think they did a terrible job. And I'll put the onus on Roc Nation. That's where I heard the blame is. They overpriced the tickets. The seating selection is very bad for what you're paying. And there is no robust market. I think greed was not good here, to quote the paraphrase Gordon Gekko. And the get-in price has been dropping steadily the last couple of weeks. So if you want to play a game of prospecting, I would say wait and just see these prices continually fall, because I believe that is what is happening.
Got it. Good to know. All right, guys. Well, enjoy football. Appreciate the call.
Thank you very much. Gabe, you know what? I think this is the perfect time to call it a day, because I'm watching Kansas State against Baylor, and then in a few minutes, we got Johnny Football and the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, that's perfect. Let the fantasy domination continue. That's what I
Yes. Say. All right. So I want to thank everyone that made this show possible, Gable Montoya and David Dwenev. So on behalf of both of them, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.
That's funny.